baptism. Reverend Thomas Conser was always uncomfortably aware of the presence of his penis. If he dressed right, it rubbed wrongly on his thigh. If he dressed left, less friction, but it stuck out more, and he felt like all could see. Boxers, and it moved too much. Briefs, and the tightness was a conscious grip. So he alternated, trying to determine daily which would be best. It was an argument he was tired of having, but one that would not, could not, be settled or let go. An antenna that picked up music that he really didn't want to hear. He was aware of his penis, its changes and reflexive motions, when he spoke to some of the women of the congregation. He would try not to visibly flinch when he felt that change of positioning, sitting down when possible. When driving down the street, lost in thought, he sometimes would pass a woman on the sidewalk heading the same direction and catch himself looking in the rearview mirror. Or worse, a quick jerk of his head to see what her face and front looked like. It would happen before he was conscious of the action, but there would be an accompanying twitch that would snap him to awareness. Brother Conser, as he encouraged his parishioners to call him, had been pastor here at Mount Zion in Shorter, Missouri for almost 4 years now. While not thought of as a particularly dynamic presence in the pulpit, Brother Conser had quietly and firmly reasserted some of the church's more traditional values. He particularly voiced his concerns about the vices of drinking and dancing and gambling and promiscuity that were insidiously becoming more accepted in modern society. He had brought to a close the efforts of some to allow women to vote in church matters. "For a husband has authority over his wife," Brother Conser had quoted to them. He did not hesitate to let high school girls know when their skirts were too short, or confront a man who was rumored to visit the beer joints in this town or the one over. He had politely humiliated more than one woman of the congregation by letting her know that slacks or shorts were not appropriate for a certain church event. Brother Conser did all this with a bright smile that barely masked a cruel streak, a smooth southern charm that delivered judgment and condemnation like a greeting card. The older members of Mount Zion thought it was about time. The younger members and families just felt a small sense of apprehension any time Brother Conser spoke to them, or singled them out, or bare-teethed invited them to stop by his office, pointedly telling them what time they were expected. The Reverend Conser enjoyed this. He found a transparent delight in their dread. At college, then at seminary, Thomas Conser had studied music. He had taken some piano lessons when he was a boy and had stuck with it enough to start college with intermediate skill, which he improved upon during undergraduate. At seminary, Thomas had become fascinated with the old Berghaus pipe organ that was in the chapel, and had taken private lessons from the wife of the chancellor, learning the manuals and stops, the ranks and pedals. He made steady progress, but gave it up halfway through his third year. Thomas's teacher was disappointed and hurt, saying that she had never had a student that showed such natural ability and dedication. "Such love," she had said. "Such love." Thomas never explained to her why he gave it up and changed his focus of study. It was too embarrassing to go into. And he didn't do it lightly. He had prayed and anguished over the decision. Nothing gave him as much joy and pleasure as playing the organ in the chapel. And therein lay the problem. As Thomas got deeper into the creation of music, the sculpting and shaping of the sound by the almost infinite combinations of stops and ranks and swells, he felt a power that was both humbling and sensual. And the longer Thomas worked at understanding this power in the music, the less he did. He tried to analyze it as something outside of himself, but could feel it becoming more internalized, more a part of his being. While his lessons with the teacher had gone quite well, a kindred spirit and friendship of sorts, Thomas found he could not practice the organ alone without getting an erection. The first time this happened, Thomas bolted from the chapel, running like he was being attacked, chased by demons. He came back the next afternoon, determined to think his way through this, to approach the music and the instrument intellectually. That lasted about 10 minutes, before the low frequencies, the soaring melody and unsettling chords of Handel were resonating through his entire body, and his body responded. Thomas would have weeks of success, then a sudden and disorienting day, then another, of failure at separating the quest for music that expressed his desire to serve God from the immersion and indulgence of the pure physical pleasure that music aroused in him. Thomas struggled with this, prayed about this, even briefly considered self-flagellation to condition himself to associate music with pain rather than pleasure. It was his actual planning of this act that made it clear to Thomas that he had no choice but to give up music if he was truly to serve God. He had always known, distantly, that serving God required sacrifice. He just never imagined it would be this. Thomas abandoned his plans for the Master of Arts, emphasis on media arts and worship, and settled for the more general Master of Divinity, a degree title he always felt embarrassed to say aloud. The divine had mastered him, not the other way around. It had required and cost him something dear and beautiful. He was asked to sacrifice, and he did. The undercurrent of this sacrifice was a loss of joy in his life, and the beginnings of a more judgmental outlook on music and most everything else, any pleasure of this world. If he could not play and create music, be a part of it, then he would fight against it and all the other faults of the flesh. It gave him a bitter sense of purpose to have an enemy in the world, a place to consciously focus his work, fueled by an unnamed revenge, looking for a place to flourish. At his first appointment out of seminary as a junior pastor, in a small town outside of St. Louis, Thomas Conser had, what was a word he could live with? An affair? No. A relationship? Certainly not. An encounter with a young woman from the congregation. This was before he married Jane, but after they were engaged. The woman was in college, legal age, he was almost certain, but still younger, and he knew the hard truth, damaged and vulnerable. Thomas had labeled this experience a test, something he had to go through and fail to properly learn from. He had done his best to encase it in concrete and sink it in the river of his faith. But images would occasionally bob to the surface of memory, and he would quiver whenever his mind refused to ignore them. The one thing he was able to keep below the surface was the fact that he never really found out what happened to that young woman. He hadn't even tried. In all his efforts to rescue his ministry, his faith, and enough self-respect to stay this course, he had let her disappear, both from his reputation and from his conscience. She was gone. But that was then, a lifetime and 3 congregations ago. Brother Conser was walking now, nearly stomping, down Oak Street in Shorter, in the direction of his church, which was 3 blocks off the downtown square, sitting on a small hill. This horrible thing started today, this festival, this collection of so many carnal indulgences that would be no good for the community, no good for his congregation, no good for the young people, no good would come of this. There would be a trashy carnival, too much food, contests and shows of vanity and pride, gambling on races. Granted, it was only turtle races, but gambling was gambling, Desire for money was greed. Thomas Conser fumed and recited these grievances to himself, his lips moving slightly. And there would be, there was right now, a beer garden, a place where the citizens of Shorter, good church-going people, could sit out in public with all their friends around and proceed to lose control of their better selves. Country music, songs glorifying infidelity and drunkenness, would be the soundtrack to this display. There would be a teen dance in the evening with a rock band, not the kind of music that Thomas grew up with, that celebrated crushes and innocence and modesty, but this newer kind that was thick with revolution and sex. The volume and the heavy beat, even when he heard it on the radio, did more than irritate him. It enraged and frightened him because he knew it, and it knew him. In the sound, he could hear that throb, the one that woke him in the middle of the night, followed him around on bad days, the one that had lurked subsonic in the Berghaus pipe organ of his seminary days. He couldn't put a name to it, but it was there. And worse, it was celebrated. The more Brother Conser thought about all this, the faster and harder he walked. His crepe summer trousers, light blue and crisp, made a faint swishing sound as he moved, a shallow panting. He had attended every city council meeting as this festival took shape and made his opposition known. He had forced himself into early committee meetings that were held to plan aspects of the event, being so outspoken in his protest that the meetings became closed door. He'd even had a couple of his church members who were on the planning committee inform him that they would not be attending services until the festival was over, but they planned to resume in the fall. Brother Conser had gone so far as to ask the church board of elders to bring it to a congregational vote to determine if the church should organize a protest of the whole event. The board delicately tabled his request, and no vote was taken. After that meeting, on the dark sidewalk in front of the church, Brother Conser was politely but firmly told by one of the church elders, Werner Strickmeyer, that while he respected Brother Conser's passion and dedication, this had gone far enough. Elder Strickmeyer owned the propane distributorship, was on the town merchants board, and was the church's main benefactor. Thomas knew he needed Strickmeyer on his side in the future for many of the projects he had planned for the church, so he did not press the matter further. Werner Strickmeyer stated that the festival would be good for the merchants, good for the town, fun for the kids. Strickmeyer didn't even acknowledge Thomas's concerns about the music and the beer and the materialism and the skimpy outfits the baton twirlers wore in the marching band. Strickmeyer's flat expression and few words were all the warning Thomas received or needed. So while the church did not sponsor any particular events, no bake sales or Bible-themed games, the parishioners were free to participate in whatever aspects of the festival they chose to, and most did. While Elder Strickmeyer's reprimand had been weeks ago, Brother Conser was remembering it as he walked to town, reliving it right now. It had darkened like a tossed cigarette, had not died out, but smoldered in Brother Conser's thoughts. He would hold on to that resentment, blow seething air across those embers of anger, and bring it all to blaze in a blistering sermon on the day after the festival, Sunday, tomorrow. This had been his plan since that night, and he had mashed and molded the words into an indictment they wouldn't forget. Much better than warning people about sin was convicting them, making them face it after it was committed. Brother Conser smiled hot as he walked, lost in persecution. Anyone passing by would have thought he was enjoying the beautiful summer day. Brother Conser walked right on past the church, looking up at the steeple pointing to heaven, another few blocks and into the downtown square. It was late morning now, and a crowd was slowly growing. He had read, had heard, that there was to be some kind of large prize giveaway mid-afternoon. Giveaway. The word itself gave Brother Conser subject matter for the sermon. Nothing in life was free. What came easy was not good for a person. The craving of material goods only led to more craving. It opened up a black hole in a person that could never be filled. Yes, tomorrow he would drive that point home, make people reflect on what they had participated in. Brother Conser drifted through the crowd, aware of his own radiating presence as shepherd of these sheep. He could see people take notice of his arrival, a slight nervousness in their greeting. He nodded and smiled at most everyone he met. The unspoken message? He was watching. He wandered aimfully, conveying the air of a man of purpose, the purpose being to never let people forget for a minute the presence of the Almighty. In this garish mess of metal and canvas and colors and smells and noise, God was still here, around them, beside them, above them, surrounding them. Don't forget that. Don't you dare.
Hey, buddy, what can I get for you?
Brother Conser looked up, saw he was standing in front of a concession booth. A young woman, high black hair, black sleeveless shirt, darkness on her eyes and lips, was leaning slightly out of the booth, a few feet above him.
What can I get you, buddy?
She asked again. First, it's not buddy, it's reverend, he said. The woman stared blankly, a smirking lack of response.
Okay,
she finally said.
What can I get for you, your holiness?
Brother Conser squinted at her. Could she not see that he was not like the rest of these people? If she could not sense that and deliver the appropriate respect he deserved, that told him a lot about the state of her life and the state of her salvation. Young lady, my name is Reverend Conser. I am the minister at Mount Zion, just down the block there. You can see the church steeple from here. And he pointed vaguely behind him. The woman looked up in that general direction. Again, something affronting and false in her response.
Oh, yeah,
she said with mock amazement.
It's beautiful.
She brought her eyes back down to the minister, a direct stare he was not used to.
So, a man of the collar, a man of the cloth, huh? I beseech thee.
And she looked skyward, her eyes rolling exaggeratedly upward and her face stretching into a mask of melodramatic sorrow, her palms meeting over her chest.
Who am I?
She said in a quick voice, holding the pose.
What are you talking about?
Brother Conser felt off balance.
Come on, who am I?
She repeated, her eyes still rolled gruesomely heavenward. She began to hum in a high falsetto, something close to Ave Maria. Brother Conser tried to find words of reprimand, something that would put this woman in her place, but nothing came.
It's El Greco. I'm doing El Greco, the Virgin Mary, El Greco.
The woman sounded mildly manic.
Don't you get it? The upturned eyes, the supplicant hands? It's El Greco.
Brother Conser was between concerned and outraged.
I know you think your sacrilege is quite funny, but it's not to me. 1 Peter 5:5 says, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder, and be clothed with humility. Oh, going all King James on me, huh?
And the woman smiled, amused.
Well, the rest of that verse says, God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. And God knows I am humble. Just look at me.
And she laughed.
How about you, preach? Are you humble?
She was still holding the El Greco pose.
What is wrong with you?
The woman settled back into normal.
Ah, nothing's wrong with me. I just get bored in here and my mind wanders. I was thinking about those creepy El Greco paintings just a little while ago, and then you came along. I guess it made some kind of connection to me. Like I said, I get bored. I'm just entertaining myself and whoever gets in the way. No offense was intended, Preach. And back to the beginning, are you going to order something or not?
The minister struggled for words.
No, I'll have a lemonade.
What is your name, if I may ask? He was thinking of reporting her to someone.
My parishioners call me Brother Conser.
The woman had her back to the minister now, filling a plastic cup from a large plastic lemon-shaped dispenser.
Well, my sisters call me Sister Cheryl, but I'm okay with just Cheryl.
She turned and placed a cup of lemonade on the counter.
So, how much?
Conser stammered.
Oh, nothing. Just take it. I've given you enough shit, and you've given me enough distraction that we'll just call it even. We'll call it the Saturday before Sunday special. How about that? You wholly rolled in here at just your lucky moment.
The minister stared at her, frowning in confusion.
Why are you talking to me like that? Why do you feel it necessary to insult my beliefs?
Brother Conser had not been spoken to like this since, well, ever. The woman, Cheryl, looked off into the distance at nothing in particular.
Oh, I'm just talking to you like I talk to anyone and everyone. I'm just having fun with words, you know, words. Words like Holy Roller and El Greco and Brother This and Sister That and the collar and the cloth. Those are all just good words, fun to say. What you believe has nothing to do with it.
Brother, and Cheryl put a spin on it. Someone was standing behind Brother Conser now, waiting to order. Thomas nearly stumbled as he moved away from the serving window, intentionally leaving the lemonade on the counter. He was not about to take it. Cheryl was talking to the next customer, joking something about his hat and how he looked like an overgrown leprechaun. The man was laughing. Thomas was not used to having a conversation with anyone where he did not get the last word. He loved to quote scripture to people. He didn't like so much having it thrown back at him. Even though there were quite a few people milling about, there were very few in the area of the concession booth. But Thomas had the distinct feeling that he had been humiliated, that numerous people saw this woman disrespect and befuddle him. He wandered away, avoiding eye contact with anyone who might have been within earshot. Brother Conser found some shade beside the post office building. He closed his eyes for a moment and fumed. This was more fuel, more examples for his sermon tomorrow morning. The lack of respect in today's youth, the ignorance of sanctity, of God's power, and the reverence it required. Thomas felt that power coursing through him, and he would deliver it full force tomorrow morning. Right now, he needed to get it on paper, while the spirit and the rage filled him. He quickly walked back the few blocks to the church, his eyes on the sidewalk, oblivious to the occasional greeting and the double takes, a gray ring at the edges of his vision. He needed to get out of the heat. He needed water. Brother Conser entered the church through the main doors into the narthex. Inside, the still air and silence was a smothering comfort to him. Within these walls was power and control, reason and focus. In here, he knew who he was. Rather than head for the south transept of the church where his formal office was located, where he met with and counseled and corrected the members of his congregation, Brother Conser went up the back stairs into the choir loft. It was a smallish area where the organist, the choir, and the sound system controls were cramped together. At the back corner of the choir loft was another small door that led up some narrow steps into the steeple of the church. Here was a tall, unfinished cubicle. The raw pine floor planks met the exposed brick walls of the steeple base, the iron girders above converging to a single point. Mounted to the base of the girders, many feet above the floor of the small room, was the cradle of the steeple bell, with a few oak beams crossing under it. The pull rope for the bell came down between the beams, and every Sunday morning, just before service began, one of the day's ushers would ring the bell 12 times, calling all disciples to worship. Occasionally, Brother Conser would ring the bell at an odd hour, on a random day, for no reason other than to remind people of the presence of God and of His church. In the early 20th century, a distraught and disgruntled church member had attempted to hang himself from the bell rope, but the single thudding toll had alerted the minister, who was able to get the man down before he accomplished his goal and his statement. Even today, there was a knotted and stitched splice in the rope about 5 feet up, where the minister had cut the man down. This room was where Brother Conser always came to write his sermons, away from the distractions and the telephone and the traffic in his office. A simple table with a straight-backed chair faced the wall and was centered on a small round window, clear-leaded glass, through which Brother Conser was offered a wide, high view of the town. There was a matching window on each of the four walls of the steeple room, and every 3 months Brother Conser would move the table to the next window, a slow, spiritual sundial, offering him new vistas and matters to consider. The room was lit by a single bulb with a pull-chain attachment that allowed for an extension cord to be plugged in above the bulb. The extension cord led to a small space heater in the winter, an oscillating fan in the summer. Brother Conser turned the light on, but did not start the fan. He took off his white shirt and hung it over the back of the chair. It was suffocatingly hot in the room, just the way Brother Conser liked it. Sweating out the strains of his ministry was a reminder of the breathless hell he had escaped through grace and mercy. He sometimes wished he could drag the entire congregation up here. He took out a stack of paper and a pen from the small drawer of the table and began to write. Line after line, paragraph after paragraph, the sermon took shape, embodying all the ideas, frustrations, and anger that had built up in him over the past months, even more in the past hours with that woman, Cheryl, at the concession booth, giving him a face and a personality to address, the embodiment of what was wrong and whom he needed to discipline and save. Though she was not of his congregation, not even of the town, obviously a member of the traveling carnival, Cheryl had given him someone to blame, someone to point his pen at. The fact that he knew little to nothing about her was to his advantage. He could fill in the blanks in the picture, her faults and fallacies, her transgressions and arrogance, however he chose. As Brother Conser wrote, he would periodically look up and out through the round window. He could see most of the downtown from this vantage point. The people, the craft booths, the entrance gate to the beer garden, the carnival rides, the top of the Ferris wheel being almost level with his view. Even this far away, he could identify some of the people in the crowd by their clothing and movements. Whenever he saw a member of his own congregation, he felt a cold resentment, certain that they knew of his objections to this festival, but they attended anyway. "Enjoy it while you can," he thought. "You will hear about it tomorrow." Squinting, he could make out the concession booth, the black shape moving within its shadows. Sweat dripped from his forehead as the minister wrote, leaving small stains and ink bleeds on the paper. He would grip the edge of the table and shake, the heat and the urgency pounding in his temples. He would pause to pray for inspiration and guidance, often drifting off into a feverish half-sleep, dreaming of hanging men and dark angels playing music, waking to see the bell rope moving slightly, then drifting deeper into blackness, dreams, and dreamless. A thumping roar brought him full awake, though still in the draining fever of the steeple heat. Through the window, level with his view, Brother Conser saw the helicopter, the centerpiece of this garish day, the ridiculous featured guest, hovering over the downtown square. He could see that the streets and sidewalks were solidly packed with people now, a twisting wave of arms and faces tilted skyward. Suddenly, the air above the crowd was a moving mist of white as hundreds of ping-pong balls were released from the helicopter. Within the roar, Brother Conser could hear screams and shouts as the crowd churned like hungry feeding fish. Swells and ripples of bodies moved in echoing waves as people reached and fell. Conser squinted and swallowed hard as he watched, his mouth slightly open in shock and thirst. He thought of the Red Sea closing on the Egyptians and the people of Babel scattering in confusion, nonsense on their tongues. This was the worst. People literally knocking each other down, trampling each other for material gain, bowing down and under to the mechanical beast that charmed them with false promises of stuff and brief adventure. Later they would eat and drink and dance to Baal, cloaked in electric twang. This was the final scene, the final inspiration Brother Conser needed to finish the sermon. He wrote from fever and vengeance, from righteous justice and conviction, from the hate and fear of the temptations that churned around him in the turbulence, that rose inside him when his guard was down. He tore off his undershirt and kicked off his shoes as he wrote the final passages, knocking over the chair as he stood over the desk and wrote the last lines. Dehydration and heat stroke, torture and delirium swirled into a trance of spiritual agony. Brother Conser fell to his knees, his forehead hitting repeatedly on the edge of the table as he prayed hard for the deliverance of his people and for his own. He fainted to the floor, feeling between his legs, and in a rush pulled off his pants and underwear. He lay naked and sweating in the dust and grime of the planks, horrified at his erection. He slapped himself hard several times, punched himself in the stomach, then in the genitals, stabbing at himself until the pen broke and ink covered his hand and dribbled across his body. He cried as he ejaculated, then passed out. Brother Conser opened his eyes to mottled darkness. A perimeter of ambient light from the windows and louvers of the steeple circling the room. He had slept for, what, hours? Dream-waking periodically to the tangled sounds of distant music and voices rising from the street. He rolled over and crawled to his strewn clothing. He wiped off his face and body with his undershirt, then tossed it aside. He found his pants, his shirt on the overturned chair, and got dressed. Squinting into the darkness, he was missing a sock. He carried his shoes out of the steeple room, feeling his way down the steps, sitting on the last one to put his shoes on. No lights were on in the church, save for the eternal flame candle that was kept lit and hanging from a chain over the altar, its soft glow giving Brother Conser enough light to find his way out of the church. Cheryl sat on the concrete base of the tall used cars sign of the Ford dealership, smoking a cigarette, blowing smoke at the moon. God, what a day it had been. Hot, busy, exhausting. Yep, pretty much like every other Saturday night she had worked this summer. Cheryl had a Saturday night ritual, a routine she had come up with that gave her a little something to look forward to at the end of every crazy Saturday, a quiet little celebration to mark off another week. In the late afternoon lull, she would make a sandwich, grab a can of Coke and a Hostess cupcake, and pack it all into a small plastic cooler with ice cubes in the bottom. In the midst of the Saturday evening madness, Cheryl would look down at that little red and white cooler and know that they were going to have some time together, somewhere quiet after midnight. She got a melancholy grin from the idea that these were the best Saturday night dates she'd had all year. It was silent now, and very late, or very early, depending on how you looked at it, Cheryl thought. The party was over. The crowds, even the last drunks, had gone home.
She and her mother had done the deep cleaning and packing. Everything was ready for the road. The end, the beginning. A loud creak and a clack broke Cheryl's reverie as the large door of the church across the street slowly opened and a disheveled-looking man stumbled out. It took her a moment to recognize the minister that she had joked with earlier in the day. He had been so prim and uppity at the concession counter. Now he looked. Cheryl cocked her head as she tried to figure out what was off. He looked like someone had beaten him up. As the door clanked closed behind him, the minister stood looking up at the sky. Half his shirt tail was out. He had something black on his face and hands and clothing. He wore one shoe and carried the other in his hand. Cheryl started to call to him, but waited, with her mouth open as he teetered on the top step of the landing. The minister dropped the shoe, then grabbed at something invisible in the air in front of him. He leaned and lost his balance, stumbled down the top steps, then fell hard to his knees as he crumpled and crashed. He reached out, flailing wildly as he tried to catch himself, stop the fall, but his arm missed the handrail, instead shot between the baluster uprights, catching like a finger in a fan, twisting the minister's arm grotesquely behind him. He somersaulted, his arm pulling loose from the balusters, then was motionless at the bottom. He made no sound, no cry of alarm or pain. Cheryl gasped as she jumped to her feet, tossed the cigarette away. But she didn't move. Instead, looked around for anyone that might have seen this happen, anyone that might know the minister, might help him, so she wouldn't have to. But there was no one. Just her. Just the night. Just the minister lying motionless in a heap at the bottom of the steps. Cheryl walked rather slowly across the street, still not quite believing, not quite responding correctly to what she had just witnessed. As Cheryl reached the church, a deep groan rose from the tangled limbs and twisted torso on the sidewalk.
"Man, are you—"
Of course he wasn't. Cheryl knelt by Brother Conser. He was on his back, mostly. His legs were turned and splayed like he was trying to run sideways. His eyes were open, rolled back in his head. Cheryl looked around again. Surely someone would come running up. In one of those illogical moves a person does when reality has been jarred, Cheryl had picked up and carried the red and white cooler with her as she crossed the street to the church. Opening it, she took out the can of Coke, icy cold now, and slipped it behind Brother Conser's neck. She had no clear thought as to why that was the thing to do. It just seemed like his head needed support, and cooling off his brain was necessary.
"Dang,"
Cheryl said under her breath, a moment of selfish disappointment for the wee hours picnic that wouldn't happen now. Conser's eyes fluttered, rolled, came into frowning focus. He looked at Cheryl and smiled, a pained and disturbing expression. He uncrossed his legs and straightened his body.
"No, no, lay still. You shouldn't move."
Cheryl was trying to remember what to do when someone fell.
"Your spine might be busted and you shouldn't move," she said.
She leaned close to check his pupils, though she wasn't sure what to look for. Through Conser's eyes, Cheryl was a disembodied face floating before him, alabaster, beautiful in the moonlight. The streetlight directly behind her head formed a ring of starry radiance. Pain and wonder and fatigue combined to erase all efforts to understand what he was seeing. He just saw. Cheryl tried to assemble the order of the elements of this strange scene. It was obvious something was wrong before Conser fell. He was a mess just standing there before he went down the steps.
"What happened to you tonight?"
she asked, her voice shaking now.
"Did someone attack you?"
"Yes," Conser paused. "God did. God and my own sin." There was not a trace of irony or humor or preachiness in his words, only a truth he believed. The face hovering before him had grown a body now. No wings, no robe, no fire. It was just a young woman. He had seen her before. He raised an arm, and they both stared at the odd angle of his wrist and hand.
Oh, man,
Cheryl's panicky mutter as she took off one of her shoes, then her sock. She reached into the cooler, laid the sandwich and cupcake aside, and grabbed several ice cubes, slipped them into the sock, then tied it loosely around Conser's wrist.
I don't know if that will help, but better than nothing,
Cheryl said.
What should I do? Who should I call? What?
She didn't even know the question to ask.
Just let me sit here a minute before you do anything, Brother Conser said. I don't think it's as bad as it looks. I'm really just shaky, and I feel so cold.
His voice quivered as he spoke.
You're probably in shock, Cheryl said. And maybe dehydrated. You looked like hell before you even fell down the steps.
She slipped her hand behind his head and pulled the coke from beneath his neck, popping the top. Conser pulled himself up onto his elbows and took a sip from the can, then downed it in dribbling gulps. Coolness coursed through his body, a sudden change of temperature at his core. This must be what forgiveness feels like, Conser thought. He had never considered it for himself. It was something needed by others, something he had withheld.
Is there a phone in the church?
Cheryl asked.
Yes, but...
And before Conser could fully answer, Cheryl went quickly up the steps, uneven on one shoe. She opened the door, expecting to see a phone close inside, but of course, there was not one. Hanging on a peg coat rack were four white robes. Not choir robes, but thick white terry cloth bath robes. This made no sense to Cheryl, but no matter. She grabbed one and brought it back to the minister, draping it over his shoulders and tucking it around him as best she could.
Oh, you found the baptismal robes, Brother Conser said. We're consecrating four of our young people tomorrow.
Why do you need robes for that?
Cheryl asked as she knelt beside Brother Conser again and tried to close the robe over his chest.
We are an immersion church. We have a pool inside where we baptize our members. They go under a sinner and come up cleansed and forgiven. Cleansed. Forgiven. Forgive me.
Conser's speech was becoming slow and fractured.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheryl shook her head the opposite.
Stop talking and let me think.
She considered walking to the center of town to try to find the marshal or anyone else that might help. But that was a long shot at this hour, wasted time, and anyone besides the marshal would probably be drunk.
Can I have that cupcake?
Brother Conser suddenly asked, the open voice of a child at a neighbor's house.
I'm hungry, and that looks good.
Yeah, sure.
And before Cheryl could finish speaking, Brother Conser had picked up the cupcake with his good hand and began struggling to tear the cellophane with his teeth.
Here, let me do that,
Cheryl said.
Your blood sugar's probably down. When did you last eat?
I don't know. I was inside for a very long time. Forever,
Brother Conser said.
It felt like forever.
He smiled brightly at Cheryl.
Here, let's split it.
Cheryl looked incredulously at Conser, trying to read the situation, his condition.
I think we need to get you to the emergency room. Have a doctor check you out. Do you live next door to the church?
Brother Conser took half the cupcake in a single crumbly bite. He started to answer Cheryl in garbled syllables, then raised a finger. Wait. He forced a swallow, then smiled.
I haven't had one of those in years.
Gosh, that's good.
Where's your house? Cheryl asked again. Next door here?
No, no. The parsonage is about four blocks that-a-way.
And Conser gave a hitchhike thumb and a giggle.
But I think I can make that.
And he began to struggle to his feet.
Stop! You can't and shouldn't walk anywhere.
Cheryl let out a shaky sigh.
Listen, and listen to me good. My family's car's parked just a couple blocks away.
I'm going to go get it. You stay here and don't try to get up. Don't even move. Can you do that?
Can I have that sandwich?
Oh, for fuck's sake, yes, you can have the sandwich if you stay sat down while you eat it. Promise?
Cheryl felt like she was bargaining with a 5-year-old.
And I'm still thirsty.
God!
Cheryl tipped the cooler and poured the icy meltwater into the Coke can.
Here, now, just stay put.
Cheryl walked away, looking back as she crossed the street. She saw Brother Conser with a curious smile as he considered the sandwich, then took a large bite. Cheryl opened her eyes wide and snorted, shook her head as she walked on. Brother Conser finished the sandwich, thought he might be dying, knew he wasn't, although part of him truly wanted to be. Dying would be easier than what he knew he was actually doing. Surrendering. To whom? To what? For what? He didn't know. He didn't care. Surrender had arrived. He never knew it existed, much less ever expected it. Cheryl walked around a corner, then another, down a short block, a cut through an alley. There was the family Chevy, luckily not yet hooked to their travel trailer. Cheryl popped the door and got behind the wheel, the keys above the visor, like always. When Cheryl pulled up at the church, Brother Conser was leaned back against the concrete steps in seeming comfort, the sandwich gone, sipping water from the Coke can. He didn't look over as Cheryl pulled up. Instead, kept his gaze on the treetops and the night sky beyond.
How are you doing?
The thing to say, as Cheryl got out of the car.
Fine. And you?
Brother Conser responded pleasantly.
Hey, I'm not the one that fell down the steps after fighting with his god tonight. Do you think you can make it to the car? Wait, don't get up until I get over there.
Cheryl got an arm, then a shoulder under Brother Conser, and helped him to his feet, careful not to grab his bent wrist. He was holding that odd smile, but Cheryl could tell by the way he flinched and squinted that he was in pain. A few careful steps over the curb and gutter, and Conser eased down into the seat.
I am the least, Brother Conser said in a small voice. I am the least.
You're hurt and you're not making any sense,
Cheryl said as she got behind the wheel again. Pressing her lips tightly, she knew the next decision was, where should she take him? Should she head for a hospital, an emergency room? She didn't know the surrounding area at all, and had no idea how to find a hospital. She would take him home.
Okay, you're going to have to pull it together enough to tell me how to get to your house. Are you married? Is your wife at home?
The first adrenaline-induced calm was leaving now. Cheryl was starting to feel panic. Brother Conser's eyes were closed. Was he conscious? What was the thing you were supposed to do? Keep them talking?
Hey, preach, wake up!
Cheryl gently shook him.
You told me your name this morning, but I forgot. What is it again? Brother what?
I'm Tom. I'm Thomas.
He looked out the window.
I'm Thomas.
Just Tom. Thomas. That struck Cheryl as simple and human, and a bit sad, like pulling the wrapping off an empty box.
Okay, Thomas, so one step at a time. Which way do I turn?
That-a-way.
The thumb again.
You gotta stay with me. Stay awake and tell me how far and where to turn. Can you do that, Thomas? Can you do that?
It's just a few blocks down. You don't even have to turn again. It's an ugly fucking house.
Cheryl smiled briefly at Conser's unexpected description.
Well, there's a lot of those. Tell me when we're getting close.
Questions. She needed to ask him questions to keep him awake and talking.
So how did you become a preacher?
Cheryl began. She knew it was a dumb question, but maybe it would keep him talking.
Huh. I don't really know.
Staring out the windshield, Thomas answered slowly, like he had never considered it.
I loved music, and I loved God, and I loved a girl. I loved a lot of things.
That's it.
right there on the corner.
And Thomas pointed to a large brick house, the porch light on.
Oh, it's not so ugly. Kind of pretty, actually,
Cheryl said as she pulled close to the curb. She jumped out and ran around the car to the passenger door. Thomas had already opened it and began to step out.
Wait, wait, let me get under you,
Cheryl said, bending down.
But I hated you,
Thomas continued his interrupted thought.
Earlier today, when we talked at your concession stand, I came away from there hating you. I hated you, and you didn't even know it. And it felt good. I don't want it to feel good. Not anymore. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I think that's your banged head talking. Let's get you up to the house. Is your wife home? Do you have a wife?
Oh, Jane. Jane will be home. She's probably sleeping.
Cheryl got her shoulder under Thomas again, her arm around his waist, and helped him up the few steps onto the porch. She was reaching to knock on the door when a face on the other side of the glass startled her. A woman's face, this must be Jane, lit by soft amber light. But Jane didn't move, didn't open the door. So Cheryl knocked, then opened the storm door with her free hand. Knocked again on the inside door as Jane backed away from the glass, then slowly opened the door. The basic information was told, the fall down the steps, the disorientation, what Thomas had eaten. Jane seemed to flinch slightly when Cheryl said his name, like an unwelcome familiarity. Cheryl asked if Jane needed any help, a ride to the hospital, helping him to the car, anything. But Cheryl didn't mean it. She wanted to get out of there. Jane stiffly thanked Cheryl, said she would drive Thomas to the emergency room herself. Jane rose and walked to the door, indicating Cheryl should follow. She pulled it closed as Cheryl left, not another word. Halfway down the steps, Cheryl stopped and turned. Jane's amber face was framed in the door pane, just as before, watching her leave. Cheryl thought, this was the saddest-looking woman she had ever seen in her life. The remainder of the night was as brief as a blink. The Chevy left town as the sun came up, and a few hours later, Cheryl was in a different state, headed for another. The organist played the opening hymn. The congregants eyed Brother Conser's bandaged wrist, the band-aid on his forehead, the bruise and ink stain on his cheek blending together. No one whispered. No glances were exchanged.
I was hungry, he began.